everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. There is a lot going on in the F1 world, so we're going to be diving into everything that's happening, all the headlines. This probably could just be titled What in the World is Happening at Alpine, but we'll get into some other fun stuff too. And I am joined by the wonderful Neha. Neha, welcome to the podcast. We're so excited to chat.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I love the pod, so always happy to jump on.
You're the best. Well, for anyone who is not familiar with you already, do you mind just giving a quick intro about you and what you're up to in this world?
Yeah. My name is Neha. My handle is at Neha K. Sridhar. I've been in this space for creating content for almost 3 years now, which feels like forever, but also no time at all. And I focus on a lot of the more informational, educational, and tech-related things about Formula One and also other sports, because I am an engineer in my real life. So yeah, that's how I kind of got looped into this whole world. And I'm very happy to be here and can't wait to see what we talk about, because oh my gosh, there's too much going on.
There's so much going on. No, I absolutely love your content. I love the educational side of things that you do. And as a fellow engineer girly at heart, I feel like it's got to represent in this world. So,
100%. I feel like it's just a fun thing to just overanalyze everything and make it more digestible for people, because people don't need to know everything about F1, but it's fun to know as much as possible.
Totally. And in a nice, digestible, explainable way. I love it. Okay, let's start with the big, I wouldn't call it an elephant in the room because everybody's talking about it. So let's start with Alpine, because it has been a downward spiral for some time. And we know that Alpine has not performed well over the past several seasons. They've had some glimmers of success and hope. I'll never forget the double Alpine podium more recently, but it's not been looking pretty for them. They've had a lot of management shakeups. They've had a lot of driver turnover. And then, of course, a lot of team principal turnover. It's just sort of been a downward spiral. And they're sitting ninth in the championship, which is tough. They also announced that they're going to be shutting down their engines program. So Renault, which Alpine is basically just the rebranded Renault team, has been providing their engines for quite some time. And it's no longer going to be providing engines. They're going to be a customer team of Mercedes, which they announced. And that was a very... I don't know if I'd say controversial, but it was a surprising decision when it came out. Yeah. Do you remember what you thought at that time? Like
it's always weird to go backwards. I think being a works team is the goal, right? You want to be able to control every single part of the car that you possibly can. And for Alpine to say, I don't think that our engines are good enough to be able to compete and to relinquish that control says a lot about the state of that team, because you want to have that control, not just be given an engine and then have to make it work with your car. Yeah. So it's very interesting. We're seeing more teams become works teams in the upcoming years. We have Audi, we have Cadillac is promised to become a works team, and Aston's going to be a works team starting next year too with Honda. It's better to be a works team. So that whole decision that they made in the first place, obviously Mercedes is notoriously reliable engine. We know it's been working for Mercedes, McLaren, and even Williams now is performing decently well. But it's a huge question mark. Like, why? I guess. But I think everything kind of started spiraling with Flavio Briatore coming back.
Yes, we will certainly talk about Flavio. I wonder if some of the reason is just around the massive shift in regulations, and I don't know Renault's corporate strategy when it comes to engines and their road cars and whatnot, but I wonder if building that type of engine was not in their budget or their plans strategically, which is a little bit odd because it feels like the tides are turning more and more towards hybrid and more towards electric. So you'd think that it would actually be more in the direction, but Alpine, I don't know. I don't know a ton about Alpine as a sports car business, but maybe Renault is just this is not in our wheelhouse and we don't want it to be. And Mercedes, we're going to put our money on them as a good 2026 and beyond regulations engine supplier, which I would also put my money on Mercedes.
Yeah, so. For sure. They seem to be, they got the first or the previous engine regulation change down so good that we saw what happened after that. So I would not be surprised if we had a similar moment, but obviously now I think there's just a lot more information and knowledge that has been spread across the paddock. So you'd hope that the field is a lot closer, but you really never know. So I'm very interested to see how Alpine goes forward with these Mercedes engines, how they continue to perform the rest of the season going into it, because obviously they need to kind of last this part out. The Alpine engine for the last couple of years, notoriously unreliable. So will that continue, or are they just like kind of trying to wait it out to make sure that they can, it's a like means to an end, I guess.
Yeah, totally. I fully agree with that. My whole theory on this is I really think Alpine is for sale. Like, I think that Alpine is not going to last very long. It's always felt a little bit random to me as a team. Like, obviously not Renault. Renault makes a lot of sense as a team. They've had a decent amount of history in F1. But the Alpine situation has been a little, I don't know, curious to me as sort of like a random brand under their umbrella. And I just feel like the performance is not there, the shakeups, the becoming a customer team, it just feels to me like the team is going to be for sale. But another thing, obviously, that we have sort of been alluding to is the team principal shakeups. So along with all the management shakeups, they've had, I think, 6 team principals in like 5+ years.
And yes, yeah,
you did a really good video on this. Do you have that history offhand? I know we started with our Drive King Cyril, but what are your thoughts on that? And take us through like the different eras.
So Alpine came to be in 2021. And before that, we had, or even going back a little bit further, Fred Vasseur was team principal of Renault for a while, then taken over by Cyril Abitbol, who we love Cyril. I think he, like, a lot of people through Drive to Survive really were like, yes, Cyril's our guy, especially as he was so a funny foil to Christian Horner. And I think that that was really funny. But after Cyril decided to leave at the beginning of the Alpine saga, I guess we can call it, then we had Marcin Butkowski, who came in, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he was there for a year. Then we had Otmar come in,
of course,
for a year and a half, of course.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. When Otmar left, Laurent Rossi, who was also CEO, left with him, which was also a very big shock. He'd been there for a while, followed by who was next? Bruno Femin, followed by Oliver Oakes. And now we're back to Flavio Briatore. I think I got everyone.
That's actually insane. So speaking of Flavio had been a Renault team principal in the past, and he was at the center of the Crashgate scandal.
Oh, so my favorite scandal to talk about.
I know. For those who need a refresher, this was at the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix when Renault driver Nelson Piquet Jr. deliberately crashed to give a sporting advantage to his teammate at the time, none other than Fernando Alonso.
And, always at the scene of the crime.
Always at the scene of the crime. And at the time, so Flavio Briatore was a team principal. He received a sort of indefinite ban from F1 and FIA related activities, but that ban was overruled by a French court. And so obviously we see him in the sport today, and he has entered the scene first, I think, as an executive advisor to Alpine.
Yeah. And then it was a very weird situation because they were like, oh, he's not really going to be a part of like day to day. He's just going to like manage top level. And that very quickly became not the truth at all. And now he was kind of just like running the show.
Now he's the acting team principal. So, you know, things are all falling into place here. The master plan is master planning. But yeah, we can talk a lot about Flavio Briatore. He's a very controversial figure in the F1 paddock. I have my own thoughts on him.
I have a lot of thoughts on him.
But yes, it is what it is. He is in the position he's in. We'll get to this when we talk about Jack Doohan and Franco Colapinto, but he's also Jack Doohan's quote-unquote manager. So it's all kind of a bizarre situation.
It really is, because I always think about it this way. Like, when you look at Flavio and Jack's relationship and you compare it to that of Toto Wolff and Esteban Ocon, who, when he was released from his seat, was literally like Toto was doing everything that he possibly could to get him what ended up being that Renault seat. And I think that's such an interesting contrast to see, like, oh, same team, but different vibes given who the manager was at the time.
Yeah. Totally. That's a really interesting comparison. Toto Ocon situation, because it's not uncommon for people in the F1 world, and like it seems like a conflict of interest sometimes for like managers to be very closely tied to the actual teams or situations that are going on. Like Toto, I think, has managed at one point all of the Mercedes drivers, like Valtteri Bottas, mm-hmm. George Russell, Kimi. I don't know if he's like stepped back in that capacity once they actually take the seat, but like he's been that manager, similar to Ocon as well. We obviously have a lot of conflicts of interest in the paddock generally, but
oh yeah, Bortoletto is like literally Alonso. Under Fernando Alonso. It's like, oh, okay. So if they're fighting on track, what happens?
Yeah, it's all a little bizarre, but So the Alpine driver situation, I feel like that's a good thing to talk about as well as we talk about Ocon, is it's not just been turnover at the top. Like we've had driver turnover as well. Alonso was there, left mm-hmm. obviously to Aston Martin. There was a huge fallout with Ocon, and remember he didn't mm-hmm. even drive the last race last season. And then we can't, of course, forget the Oscar Piastri contract mess where he originally supposed to drive for Alpine. And then it was the smartest thing he and Mark Webber ever did to look at McLaren and get himself out of that. But yeah, I don't know. Do you think the team could be up for sale? And my question is, like, this investor consortium, remember all the hype around mm-hmm. like Travis Kelce coming in and some others,
yeah.
celebrities?
Like there were like two big consortiums of like yeah. the athletes and then also the like movie stars, I guess, because yeah. it was like Ryan Reynolds and Michael B. Jordan. And yeah. you're like, I wonder, because they obviously have to know what's going on. They're part owners in this team, or they have to have some information
yeah.
about like the state of the team. I wonder how they would like how they feel, because especially seeing, I guess, news wise, but then also just like the performance of the team, you have to be kind of weary in your investment. And
yeah,
it's a lot of money running a Formula One team. Even having a small percentage of a Formula One team is not cheap. So
yeah.
I think I've had this question for a really long time. I think since Otmar left, so what is that, like almost two years ago, mm-hmm. of that whole question mark of, is this team functional enough to stick around for a long time? Because I know there were also rumors of someone buying them. I think Andretti was a huge name to come in and try to buy Alpine, but obviously that's not really needed anymore. But it is definitely a huge question mark, because the team can't just continue on
no.
the way that they are, because I don't think they and the reality is they don't want to, but even like Sauber is making steps to do better, get better. They are now becoming Audi, and like I feel like Alpine is not really going in similar ways. They're not trying to create a stable environment. They're just like, we need results now. Let's try to do anything we possibly can just to get those results that we need right now, right here.
Yeah, definitely. That the buying rumors kind of bring us to the whole Oliver Oakes scandal, because there was a rumor at one point that Oliver Oakes, who was the founder of the junior team Hi-Tech GP, there was a rumor that Hi-Tech GP was going to make an F1 bid. And then this was mm-hmm. sort of seen, his step into Alpine was maybe seen as, okay, maybe Hi-Tech GP will take over Alpine. So
yes,
let's talk about Oliver Oakes. I think by the time
oh my goodness.
Episode is out there, hopefully maybe will be a development in the news. Right now, there's a lot of speculation. We'll talk about what we know and then talk about, you know, maybe what's speculated, but noting that these are all allegations at this point. And
yes.
this podcast is not in the business of spreading false rumors. So we will clarify what is known and what is not. So mm-hmm. what we do know is Oliver Oakes resigned 24 hours before the announcement was made that Jack Doohan was going to be out and Franco mm-hmm. Colapinto was going to be in. It later came out that Oliver Oakes's brother, William Oakes, was arrested the week prior for quote-unquote transferring criminal property and having a large amount of cash. Now, his brother William is the director of Hi-Tech GP, so the Oakes brothers have, you know, managed Hi-Tech GP, this junior team, for many years, I think since 2015.
Yeah.
And then the other kind of piece of this is the Mazepin connection. So Dmitry Mazepin, Russian oligarch, his son, Nikita Mazepin, drove in Formula One for Haas most recently, but stopped, and Dmitry Mazepin had to stop business in the UK during Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. So the Mazepin connection to Oliver Oakes is that the Mazepins owned a controlling stake in High Tech GP, which I believe was bought by the Oakes brothers. I don't remember which year, but they took over that stake from the Mazepins. And so right now, Oliver Oakes is rumored to be in Dubai, and there are some allegations floating around that High Tech GP has deeper ties and potentially connections to the Mazepins still, and maybe some sort of front for doing business for them. So the Dubai thing and the Mazepin, the ongoing Mazepin connection, those are alleged. We don't know any of that for sure, but all the stuff before that are facts. What do you make of this mess, Neha?
My goodness. Did I think that we would be hearing about the Mazepins in 2025? I really didn't. I'm not going to lie. When I was just trying to consume as much information as possible, because I was just, it's such a question mark right now, because there's very, very little information that we actually know. But the fact that the facts that we know that the Oakes brothers did have some affiliation with the Mazepin family in terms of High Tech GP is true, and also is very, it's just so confusing, and I want to know more, and I really can't make anything of it right now. We do also know that the High Tech GP cars for F2 and F3 were seized, which is, I think they're supposed to race this weekend, which is, or at least for Imola. So that is sad for their drivers who are obviously trying to win championships. But wow, it's a very interesting situation, because I know there was also that whole thing where everyone thought that Oliver Oakes resigned because of a conflict with Flavio regarding the seat swap. And then the statement that was released said that Flavio was like his father. And I was like, that's such an interesting way to put it. Sure, I guess. But which is, oh my gosh. But yeah, I really don't know what to make of it right now, just because there is so much unknown in the situation, but it is definitely alarming. Yes. And does it have any, it's also that whole question of, does it have any affiliation to Alpine? That's like the kind of tie-in. Was Oliver Oakes in part with High Tech GP somehow, like, how is Alpine connected to the whole situation, which I think is the other thing that will definitely be looked into in the future.
Yeah, Alpine refused to comment on the William Oakes arrest or any of that situation, saying that it has nothing to do with the F1 team. But this feels like we're only at the tip of the iceberg here, and there's a lot more underneath that we're just patiently waiting to find out. But I saw, I think it was in our Discord, someone was saying this is feeling like the 80s and 90s again, like international crime and all of the craziness that's happening. And it obviously is very serious if these allegations are true, and we'll find out slowly but surely what's actually going on. But I do think that it was interesting how everybody sort of jumped on Oliver Oakes resigning as a disagreement within the team over the seat swap and all of that. It almost feels like it's not even connected. Like, I wonder how much it is connected. Obviously, there's money involved with the Franco Colapinto situation, but like, it feels like weird timing for them to announce the Oliver Oakes resignation and then all of this stuff come out around it, but then having just announced the Colapinto Doohan seat swap, I wonder if they did that to like try to distract from some of the other stuff going on so that everybody's focused on talking about Franco versus Jack instead of the potential allegations related to Oliver Oakes and High Tech GP and the Mazepins. But yeah, it's weird. I also saw someone say that we deserve to apologize to Flavio Briatore, which, let's not go that far, but he deserves an apology for us just assuming that Oliver Oakes left because he was standing up for Jack Doohan and Flavio was just like the bully in the situation, which doesn't seem to be true. So
that's a crazy comment for one, but at the same time, I'm just like, it I feel like assumptions are just how Formula One operates at this point. It's like the series of events, whatever we want to make sense out of a situation, we do whatever we can because of the limited information that we get. And Formula One is generally an open book, so that makes it easier for us to parse through information and kind of create a cohesive storyline. But right now, it's either these two very distinct storylines within the same team are interconnected or they're not. Mm-hmm. And whichever way it goes, it's still going to be really interesting, because if they're connected, then oh my goodness, it's going to be a storm. And if they're not connected, then we have two very weird things that just ended up happening at the same time in parallel within the same team. So either way, we have a crazy thing to look into.
100%. Okay, let's get into Franco versus Jack Doohan, because there's also so much to talk about here.
Like, oh, for sure.
Was this the right timing, like now versus summer break? Is it fair? Like, why did this decision get made? So maybe let's just start with the situation. And mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to look at stats. So I pulled some stats for both Jack Doohan and Franco Colapinto's performance. And yes, I understand it's hard to compare them because they mm-hmm. didn't race at the same tracks. They didn't race in the same car against the same teammate. But again, like we were just saying, it's the information we have. So yes. let's look at it. So Jack Doohan raced for the first, six races in mm-hmm. Formula One this season. He was an Alpine junior driver, and he has finished so far this season at an average position in quali of like 15.5, an average race position of 14.8, and he's had two DNFs out of those six races. In terms of his qualifying head-to-head with Gasly, he has finished an average of 4.2 positions behind Gasly. And then Franco Colapinto, he raced at Williams for 9 races last season. He replaced Logan Sargeant, raced against Alex Albon as his teammate. His average quali position was 15.8, average race position 11.2. And out of those 9 races, he had 3 DNFs. And his qualifying head-to-head with Albon was he finished an average of 3.3 positions behind Albon. So if you look at just the data, and again, it's not fully apples to apples, but I do think because Williams's car last year and Alpine's car this year are relatively similar in performance. Williams mm-hmm. finished P9 last year. Alpine is currently P9 in constructors this year. Albon and Gasly are relatively similar benchmark as a teammate, I think, because they're both pretty seasoned, both around the same level of talent, although I'm sure that's debatable as well. But if you look at these results on their head, like, they're not super different. I think they're pretty well matched, and you know, people are going to eat me up for even saying this, but like, they're relatively well matched in terms of results. Obviously, Franco comes with a lot more commercial value than Jack Doohan. Mm-hmm. He has a huge fan base, but he's also new, and like, he kind of came into Williams raring to go, really impressed people, but then towards the back of the season kind of fell off, had a lot of his crashes, caused a lot of damage. So I guess with all of that said, if you look outside the commercial value type of things, do you think on talent and on race pace and on potential, this swap makes sense at this stage?
I don't think the swap makes sense in general. I am like one of those people who is of the opinion a rookie deserves a full season in Formula One. There's no way that you get to grips with that kind of car, which is so incredibly different from an F2 car, given that Jack was also not racing for, I think, 2 seasons before even stepping into the car at the end of last season. He was just a reserve driver. So in that way, you're like, oh, that's a crazy thing to like just expect him to come in and then just like, you better do mm-hmm. as well as Gasly, who's been in the sport since 2015. And I think Mick Doohan actually posted on his Instagram yesterday his stories of the head-to-head between Pierre and Jack, and the results aren't overwhelmingly different. It's just that I think Pierre had one very good race where he qualified very well and then ended up finishing in the points. That's like the one main difference in terms of where they finished. I think Jack, like, 6 races is in no way enough to gauge potential. Yeah. They're also all mostly at tracks that he hadn't raced at before. Like, a lot of these, like Bahrain, Jeddah, obviously were on the F2 calendar, but then you look at Miami, not on the F2 calendar.
Yeah.
And you see how that can also affect performance. And then you're going to go ahead and compare it to Franco for the next five races. Also, these six race, five race contracts, crazy. Absolutely crazy. But Franco, who's going to be racing primarily at tracks that they do race at in F2 yeah. and F3. And you are like, okay, so are we going to actually be comparing these head to head? Because that's also not of like perfectly controlled data set, and you're never going to get a perfectly controlled data set as much as we want that. And my brain craves that, but it's not going to happen. And I think that I made a video on this, I think a couple of days ago, but they are only, Alpine's only allowed to have four drivers per season. Any F1 team is only allowed to have up to four drivers per season. And they've already like bringing Franco in, they've exhausted three, which means if anyone gets injured, if anything happens, then they have one more driver that they can potentially trial, or they have to cycle through these four in yeah. whatever way they decide. So I don't think it's fair. I don't think Jack deserved to be out of a seat. And I know these rumors were floating around even before the season even started. And I kind of cast them off because I was like, there's no way they're going to do that. That yeah. makes no sense. And here we are. So I think Franco's a great driver. I think he really proved himself in F1. And I think that going from Logan to Franco, even though at the time I did think was like a slightly rash decision, it made more sense. Logan had been in the sport for a full season at least, and then Franco stepped in and performed better. And that instant impact is, again, a pattern that we're seeing with Alpine, where it's like they're just looking for any kind of results they can. It's like, who can we put in there to give us exactly what we want in this current moment? They're doing that with team principals. Looks like they're doing that with drivers too.
Totally. I think I felt like this swap was going to be inevitable. I do think what Franco Colapinto brings in terms of commercial value, in terms of fan base, like if you scroll through any of Alpine's comments, they're all in Spanish. Like, I'm scared to post anything about Franco Colapinto. That is nothing more than he is a god, because like the internet will actually rip me to shreds. So I had a feeling it would happen, not only for that reason, but also because Franco Colapinto, to your point, has done very well in F1 so far, maybe minus the last few races of the season. But I still think that they should have given Jack more time. I agree on that. I think they should have at least given him till the summer break. I don't think it's fair. I actually think Jack has handled the pressure incredibly well.
Season
and having like, it was a foregone conclusion in everybody else's mind that he was going to be out of that seat. Like, how do you show up, stay so calm and cool and collected? And yes, he didn't perform amazingly. And yeah, I guess you really just have to look at his performance vis-a-vis Gasly. But like, it just feels like it's a little bit too soon for a rookie to swap. And I think Aaron Mart messaged us on Instagram saying, I feel like Red Bull doing that with Liam gave the idea that it's okay to switch drivers more frequently or have these mini contracts. And not to sort of like shine the spotlight on Red Bull, but I do think that is true. And for a long time, Red Bull was sort of seen as this outlier, this kind of ruthless, we're going to just rotate drivers through our junior driver development program doesn't really mean anything because everyone we put in that seat next to Max and he just like gets cycled out anyway. But I feel like it's now almost starting to feel like the norm. And
yes,
I just, it feels wrong. And I made a video about how Mercedes as a team has sort of done the opposite, and their ability and willingness to invest in developing drivers. And especially as we look at Kimi coming into F1, like, it's night and day. And I understand that Mercedes may have more resources as a top team, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be doing any of these elements as a more midfield or backmarker team. Like, what in the world is the point of a junior driver development program if you're not actually going to over-prepare them for when the time comes for them to sit in the seat? And I don't feel like Alpine has done that to any degree. And we're seeing this now. And I think Red Bull is probably pretty similar, but it's this sink or swim environment where you just sort of expect drivers to come in and they either make it or they don't. They're going to be a world champion or they're not. And you have to prove yourself within five or six races. It just feels so unrealistic to me.
Oh, for sure. And the four driver rule only came into effect because of Red Bull. And yeah. I think it was 2014. They were just kind of, let's put anyone that we possibly can in that seat, because they were losing Seb the following year and all of these things were happening. But I think everyone, like Red Bull, if we look at the Red Bull use case, they want everyone to be Max Verstappen. And Mercedes, I think, learned from their mistakes when they did lose Max Verstappen. Mm-hmm. And they saw the potential in Kimi. They said, we're going to invest in Kimi. We're going to do everything and make sure that he is as prepared as he can. Was there so much speculation of would he actually perform in a Formula One car before the season started? Of course. And has he been performing? Yes. Like, he's been doing great. Shout out Kimi Antonelli. He's one of my favorites right now. But then we go ahead and look at how Alpine has done it. Jack has been in there, or he was at Red Bull and then he came into Alpine. He's been there for two seasons as a reserve driver. And I guess the real question is, have they been doing anything to really nurture him as a driver? Obviously, he's like not a kid, but like he is still part of that program in order to get a seat in Formula One. That's like the whole point. And I don't think that they've done enough. No. So that's a very interesting thing. Franco, I think, like at Williams, I also think they do a really good job at kind of mm-hmm. trying to cultivate these drivers and make them as like well-rounded as possible. And I think that their willingness to let Franco go was also a whole thing of, we have done everything that we can for you. And as James Bell has said, Alpine is the place where you could get a seat the yeah. soonest. Yeah. So go, like, you go do your thing because we know we believe in you. So it's that, like, that culture of the team that we're not seeing at Alpine that we are seeing elsewhere. Yeah, that Kimi Antonelli example is definitely, I think, such a juxtaposition to what we're yeah. seeing.
Yeah, I think Williams does it well. I think McLaren has done it really well. Like, yes. just look at Lando, who has grown up in that organization. Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power, so how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That is a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI for new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock. Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might actually not be Ferrari's strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. I personally took the quiz, and one of the recommendations I got was to start Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, fatigue, weight gain, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. So ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today.
But yeah, it didn't really fully click for me until going to that Kimi Antonelli WhatsApp premiere mm-hmm. of when they were talking about all the things that they did to over prepare him for the season, like everything from designing the worst possible flight plans so he could get used to jet lag to, you know, getting him prepared for all the marketing and PR and events that come with the job. Like they just created a soft landing for him so that, as in their words, like as little as possible was new to him when he stepped foot in that Australian paddock. And it doesn't take away anything from Kimi's talent or raw abilities. Like he's an incredibly exceptional talent. There's no denying that, even if you take away all the support. But that support has allowed that talent to come through and it's given him the best chance to succeed. Because I think, as I said in the video, like then at least as a team, you know that if someone sinks or swims, it's due to them. It's not because of you as a team and your unwillingness to invest and prepare, which frankly is just a horrible business decision if you have a junior development program in the first place. Like what?
100%. I think especially Red Bull's junior development program, there's been a lot of question marks over the years of, is it actually working? Because there was just a surplus of drivers and there weren't enough seats. And I think now that they've kind of cut it down, we're seeing that talent kind of shine through a little bit more. I know there's like Arvid Lindlat, who's coming through F2, as looks very promising. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him in a seat. Isaac Hadjar has been performing very, very well in that car, which is great to see. So it's just like a slow, like, can you take the talent that they already have, as you were saying, and amplify it and make it seem just as normal as possible rather than just adding all the pressure in the world so that they just crack or crash and burn if they can't handle it.
And the privilege that Red Bull has is that they have a second team. So like, yes, even if you don't flourish in the seat next to Max Verstappen, because frankly, no one will probably, they have a backup F1 team that they can put other people in. Like Alpine doesn't have that luxury. They have two seats. So if you're going to put someone in that seat, like nurture them and make sure that you're not killing their career after five races, because there is no backup. Like there is no junior Alpine team to put them in and give them more experience. So there is definitely a Red Bull privilege to having a junior team in F1. Yeah.
I still can't believe the 5 race contract. That is something I'm just like, my brain is not processing it, because I'm like, how is he going to only be in the seat? What happens after 5 races? That's 11 races. There's still 13 left to go. Who's going to be in that seat? Are they going to bring in Paul Aaron just to like see how he does and then decide like every single race, like whoever suits that track the best, they'll just like push that person is like a Pokemon. I don't know.
It's a recipe, like a Pokemon. It's a recipe for disaster.
It really is. And it's just that uncertainty where you're like, what is the game plan here? In that way, I want to pick Flavio Briatore's brain just to be like, what are you doing? What's going on here?
What is going on in between your ears? There was one comment on the video I did about Mercedes development of Kimi that I kind of want to read because I think it's a really good point. This was from Baros Marlia. She says, I think there is this lingering nostalgia of the good old days when F1 was a much more careless sport on drivers' well-being. These scenarios were fed as a push to see who are the really good drivers, the ones that really want to be champion. As safety regulations were implemented, those nostalgic people in power still hold on to creating unnecessary psychological pressure points because they see it as a way to select the quote-unquote real ones, as if driving a car 300 kilometers per hour, 24 races a year is not enough pressure already. And I think that's just a really sharp commentary on the state of Formula One right now and how we have a lot of these kind of old guard Formula One people who feel like you just have to sink or swim, no support, safety regulations be damned. What even is mental health? Like we actually, I don't know, have to maybe think about providing a good environment for drivers to succeed in. And look, I see both sides of the coin of, yes, F1 is the pinnacle of motorsport. If you can't make it, and if you need all of these extra things and support around you to succeed, maybe you're not cut out for it. There are a million people waiting in line for one of 20 seats in the sport. I get that. But I also think, like, if you're a team, make it as easy as possible for drivers to succeed. Like, I just don't – I don't know. It goes back to everything we were saying, but
– yeah.
This was
I think McLaren has actually done an amazing job at that. I think with Lando coming in at such a young age, and then with Oscar after all the turmoil, they've done a really good job at kind of keeping both of them in, I mean, not race-wise, we're not going to talk about their strategy, but in terms of mental health and like team standing, I think that they have done a really, really good job at cultivating a good environment for them. The fact is they're signing for years and years and years in advance. And that's something that like is not like multi-year contract. I hate how vague it is, but it's a testament to McLaren having a commitment to their drivers and being like, we want you here and we want to build you a race-winning car, which we're not seeing at a ton of places. I think the other multi-year contract that we've really heard of is Charles, and Charles is Ferrari till he dies. So like that's kind of expected. So I think that McLaren has done a really good job at like not only locking down their drivers, but providing that reassurance that this isn't going to be a volatile environment. We're doing everything that we can to ensure that you have all the tools you need to succeed.
Yeah, 100% agree on that. Maybe last thing on this topic before we exit the Alpine nightmare is I think one thing that's not talked about nearly enough right now is Pierre Gasly okay? Like,
oh my gosh, yeah.
In the middle of all of this absolute like storm of horribleness, and the poor guy is just like there, and I feel like it's been pretty quiet around Pierre. And of course, I'm sure he doesn't want to get involved in all the drama and whatnot, but like this team is sort of imploding as it feels. And Pierre is an incredible driver and a great talent and has done some good things with this car. But like, it feels, talk about an environment where you're not set up to succeed in, like even a seasoned driver, this must be incredibly hard for him.
Oh, I'm sure. And I think that he's, from what it seems, I mean, he posted on his story that he's just like in the simulator. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, you're just hanging out. Sounds great.
Disassociate from all of this, Pierre. We support you.
But I think he's probably in this position where it's like, I'm the benchmark here. I think he's kind of guaranteed whatever it is. One, because he's the veteran driver and they definitely need that. But also, he knows that like, whatever he does, I guess it's not really him. It's always going to be who's the younger kid who's coming in and how are they performing against me, which is really also crazy to think about. He was that with Max, and even though Max is younger than him, and you're going to see how all of these dynamics shift, I guess, or because you never know. What if Franco comes in and just like massively outperforms all expectations? So I think for right now, Pierre is just like the benchmark. He exists to provide the feedback that the team would need to make upgrades and like adjust the car in the way that they need. But he doesn't have anything to worry about right now. If I think the points that he earned are really kind of keeping him at bay right now. But if anything changes, if there, because given Alpine, anything could change with the job. Like anything could change whenever we least expect it. So in that way, we're like, okay, don't get too comfortable, because you could never get too comfortable in Formula One.
Yeah, I worry less about him having no seat security, but I worry more about his career and where he goes from here, because Alpine just doesn't seem like the place where he's going to be consistently fighting for points, potentially, you know, being in the top five, let alone getting podiums, let alone ever being a world champion.
But do you think that he could you see him anywhere else, I guess?
It doesn't feel like there are any openings in the meantime, but like, I don't know. He's a really talented driver, and to be sitting at a P9 backmarker team right now, like there are so few seats in Formula One. There are never enough to go around for the talent that's out there. But yeah, I would much rather see Pierre at pretty much any other team than Alpine right now.
That is fair. And honestly, I think that just given the state of Alpine, I don't wish that upon anyone at all. And I think about it, because we were talking about this earlier, the Fernando Esteban like Oscar situation, they got out, like good for them. My gosh, Esteban, maybe like, even though he'd been with that team for so long, maybe not doing that last race was the best thing that could happen for him.
I know. Ocon got out, he thank God for that, but I want Pierre Gasly to to exit stage left as well. Okay. I think that's that on Alpine. Maybe one other headline that is relatively big in the past week is the FIA elections and Carlos Sainz Sr. announcing that he is considering running for president. Now, there's a lot in there. We've seen a lot of rumors about, you know, Susie Wolf maybe running as well. But when we talk about Carlos Sainz Sr., a lot of the discussion that has come up is that a major conflict of interest, given that his son, Carlos Sainz, races in the sport, and this is the governing body of the sport. It's not just like, okay, there's, you know, another team owner, like Lawrence Stroll versus Lance Stroll. Although my response to all of that is like, this whole sport is a walking conflict of interest. So I really don't think this is any different or worse necessarily than anything else that's happening. You know, like we have Lawrence Stroll and Lance Stroll, the owner of the team and the literal driver of the team, who has locked up a seat in Formula One for an indefinite amount of time because his father holds the purse strings and has the power to do so. We have Red Bull having two teams in the sport, which is crazy. People made a big fuss about Susie and Toto Wolff being a potential conflict of interest as well. But I just feel like this whole sport is a walking conflict of interest, which doesn't necessarily make it right. But I don't think Carlos Sainz Sr. and Carlos Sainz Jr. are any more a conflict of interest than anything else we just mentioned.
I agree. And I think that obviously when it's like father-son, but the FIA president is not supposed to have like a ton of or as much kind of presence as I think MBS currently does just in the general space. They're there to literally set regulations. They're not there to pick and choose favorites. They're literally setting the sporting regulations and verifying the technical regulations. It's not just Formula One. It's also F2 and F3 and Formula Renault and WEC and whatnot. There's so many series that fall under the FIA. They're just the governing body. It's not like Carlos Sainz Sr. is just going to be like, oh, you gave my son a penalty, like get rid of that. That's
not
how that works.
Stewarding the races, people. Like, there are stewards for that.
Actually, kind of. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's not a race director or anything like that. I think being a race director would be a significantly bigger conflict of interest than, or a steward, than being the FIA president. And even if we look back, I know that Jean Todt was the previous FIA president to MBS, and he was also the team principal of Ferrari, and not like that's the same conflict, but like, let's be like, Ferrari is like a religion in the context of the sport. He's not picking favorites. You can't do that. At some point you have to be impartial. And I think that if I also believe that people are inherently good, so he wouldn't run for this position knowing that he's trying to benefit a singular human being, and that human being his son. I don't think he would go into this with bad intentions. He's also a rally driver himself, and he competes. So I think he's there more so for motorsports in general, is at least the feeling I've gotten after hearing these headlines. My first thought wasn't, oh, conflict of interest, his son is driving in Formula One, because the FIA is not just Formula One.
Yeah. My first thought was, he seems like he would be an incredible FIA president who has the best interests of drivers in mind, who actually potentially has the ability to challenge MBS in those elections, although that's a whole separate question with the level of corruption currently. And yes, I would go so far as to say corruption. I don't know if anyone will be able to challenge MBS in the elections, the quote unquote elections. But my first thought was like, do we have someone who could actually potentially, you know, stand a chance to end this era of the FIA? And I feel
it's
like
crazy
Carlos
that's only
is oh, that person.
Sorry. Yeah, it's crazy that's only been 4 years is kind of my whole thing. I can't believe it's only been four, because there was definitely a shift after, like, since 2021. But you also look at, oh, like you were saying, someone who has the best interest of the driver because of his son, like, that is the best way to look at it, right? So, I don't think of this as a conflict of interest. And people who do, I think, just don't like Carlos Sainz.
Yeah. Which, I'm sorry, who doesn't like Carlos Sainz? The man is just like a great guy.
This is like a walking L'Oreal ad.
I know. He's like a great teammate. He's a pretty successful driver, very talented, like not, doesn't really have any enemies in the paddock. Like, he doesn't like Carlos Sainz.
He's a good time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was a lot. There is a lot going on. These are all developing stories. I'm sure some of this will even be outdated by Monday when you hear this episode. But, you know, that's the world we live in. And that's why we love Formula One. It's the gift that keeps on giving. But Neha, thank you so much for joining. This was so fun.
Thank you for having me. Absolutely loved anything to talk about Flavio Briatore and all the Alpine shenanigans. I will talk for hours and hours and hours if I could.
A perfect weekend. Okay. Well, actually, one more thing to wrap up. We always do hot takes for the next race, and it is Imola. So do you have a hot take or prediction for Imola race weekend?
Oh, goodness. I've been saying this for the last like three races, and I think it's perfect for Imola. Kimi Antonelli podium.
Yes. That was my hot take last in Miami, and we were so close to it. But in Italy, it would just be...
It would be so good. It'd be if my ideal podium would be... I mean, I love Oscar, so it would be Oscar, Charles, Kimi, in any order, I guess. Yeah,
I love
that. So, yes.
Okay, I would also agree on the Kimi, but to be different, I'm going to say a double Ferrari podium to keep the
I would love that too.
Italian energy alive. So we're really manifesting Italy.
Yes. I just want to sing the Italian national anthem. Is that too much to ask?
I know, same. All right, well, we'll see what happens. But Neha, thank you so much.